Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Today's episode is brought to you by Hack Number 30. Your business partially comes down to you and partially to the ability to destroy anything, no matter how good you feel about it. You have a choice of whether something lives or dies, which is not based on how much you like it. It's based on how far it can jump, and how far it can jump is based on its ability to adapt. The main point is to avoid emotional attachment and be willing to destroy something at any time in order to rebuild it. Julian Smith, co-founder and CEO of Breather. Get this and 49 other hacks in my book, Hack the Entrepreneur, right now on Amazon.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a former professional stand-up comedian, a copywriter, consultant, and an entrepreneur. His unique background as a nightclub comic and in-the-trenches salesperson provide a rare spectrum of experience and ability. Today, as the founder and head of Copy Chief, my guest is one of the most in-demand sales consultants online. He works closely with high-volume information marketers, corporations, and local brick-and-mortar businesses. He is also the author of The 60-Second Sales Hook. Now, let's hack Kevin Rogers. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Colony FM. If you were like me and you've noticed that there are just way too many good blogs and articles out there to possibly read ever, thankfully, there's a new app called Colony FM, which uses voice actors to narrate great articles and blog posts. What I find really cool about using Colony FM is that it's actually a real person reading, and that seems to be the key. There are other services out there that use Siri-style voices and like robotic voices, but it's just not the same and can get annoying very, very quickly. The people I hear reading on Colony FM app sound like living, breathing, warm-blooded human beings, and when I close my eyes, it's like having my own personal secretary. Whether you're in the car, in the office, washing dishes, or just hanging out, nothing is easier or more soothing than having a real person do your reading for you. Go to colony.fm/hack right now to get the service completely free. That's right, completely free. It's available on the web, on the App Store, and the Google Play Store. Go to colony.fm/hack right now to get Colony FM absolutely free. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very special guest, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here, man.
Absolutely. My pleasure. This is going to be fun. Let's jump into it, Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
John, I take comedic chances with my marketing and my messages. I'm not afraid to look like an idiot. That's another way to say it.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's funny, as a copywriter, I get this advice. Look, I'm a former stand-up comedian turned copywriter, right? And so the natural question I get a lot is, should I be funny in my sales letters? And my standard answer is no, do not. For a lot of reasons, mostly, especially in print, sarcasm is really hard to sell. And people are distracted and you can come off like a jerk. However, now that I have my own subscribers and I'm, you know, privileged to have a dialogue with people who want to hear from me, I get to have some fun. And so I'll do, you know, I'll just get a whim, John, and I'll just go with it. And what I love about, you know, this being an entrepreneur today is that it's literally hitting upload on your phone and it's out to the world. And I've learned to really try to bypass my filter. I keep it intact, you know, enough. I don't want to offend anyone. I'm not out to offend anyone. I'm not a ruffle feathers kind of guy necessarily. But, you know, if I look a little stupid more than I was funny one time, I'm okay with that. Because when it when it works, it really works well.
Yeah, this hitting the upload from your phone but then also removing your filters. I like this. So would you consider not people on, like, say, an email list already that are kind of in your core audience, but when you're looking for new people, would you think that, Kevin, you are trying to attract people that will be into the Copy Chief brand, or are you trying to repel people that won't be into it?
Yeah, great question. Both. Definitely both at the same time. I'm more interested in attracting people who it could serve, because, you know, if some people sneak in, if they don't quickly realize they're in the wrong place, I'll help them see that as I politely escort them out the door.
with a boot.
And that hasn't really happened very often. Really, the only person who isn't a good fit is a trolling type, and they tend to not want to pay to troll. But yeah, I want people who aren't taking themselves too seriously are willing to have, look, you don't have to be a clown, but if, you know, everything is life or death and you live and die by data points, and that's what you think of marketing is all data. I'm not your guy. You know, there's other people for that. There's really brilliant, you know, conversion rate optimization people out there who will talk stats with you all day long. I'm the guy who wants to help you really discover who you are and why people should be buying from you. And for me, if I can get people to go, I can't believe this guy just made a satirical testimonial, you know, talking about how he lived in a garbage can and was able to, through the amazing coaching of his mentor, move his family into a dumpster. Which is a video I made that ended up, you know, going somewhat viral. And what was hilarious, John, was how many people wrote to me privately to say, man, I never knew. I'm so sorry you went through that. And that's just fun, you know?
That is. And I mean, it's fun and it's good, but if that's not you, then obviously that's not something that should be sort of emulated. You shouldn't try and be witty and funny. You're right. Especially if you're not witty, which is hard for people to admit sometimes that they aren't.
Yeah.
But you have a knack for it because you have a previous career as a comedian, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And so let's do this because I want to go back to that, because there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things. That either they have this calling to make this huge difference in the world, mm-hmm. or they just find that they're simply unemployable and cannot work for somebody else anymore. So Kevin, taking us back, could you tell me what side of the fence you see yourself on, and then sort of explain to me when you discovered this about yourself? Mm.
Yeah, it definitely started with the latter, and I'd say it's developed into the former. So I realized I couldn't work for people when I dropped out of high school. And the reason I did was because I was just so bored in the school system. And I just wanted to be out with the real folks deciding where I get to go after I wake up. You know, that's what was my idea. It was like, wow, I would be sitting on the school bus looking at people driving to work going, you got it made. Look at you. You know, you're listening to whatever you want on the radio. You're going to go someplace and then you're going to get a paycheck. Man, you're awesome. And then, you know, I end up quitting high school in like the 11th grade, and I go to work at a supermarket. And then, you know, I'm like, this sucks, you know? And so, you know, I was fortunate in that I found comedy really early. I think I was 17 the first time I walked on a comedy stage. And by the time I was 19, I was on the road getting paid to go gig to gig and tell jokes to strangers in nightclubs who I wasn't, you know, old enough to be in there with. And so I knew then that was a good gig. And it's funny, you know, my dad would say to me, you know, I'd be on my third week of gigs and I'd call my dad to tell him, oh, I killed last night. It was great. And he'd listen and he'd go, okay, that sounds fun, Kev. Are you going to look for a job when you get home? I'm like, this is my job, Dad. I'm doing it. It's a miracle. They're paying me for this. So I knew that after almost a decade of stand-up comedy that there, you know, and here's the thing, man, I did quit and try to go legit, you know, because I the only thing I wanted more than a successful stand-up career was to not become an old, bitter road comic. Because I worked with a lot of those, and it was sad because they're still out there, a lot of these cats, and they're brilliant. They're incredibly funny. But, you know, for whatever reason, it's show business. Like, talent is only the first requirement, you know? All these other things have to happen for you to actually get to have a good career, and the numbers are not on your side. And so I said, if things aren't clicking for me around 30, I'm gonna figure something else out. And I knew that I wanted to marry my wife, and I wasn't gonna risk losing her. And even though she was amazingly supportive of my comedy, you know, if we were gonna have a life together, it meant not being on the road. And so I then tried to, you know, I did whatever every great entertainer does when they wanna get more steady income. They go to bartending school. And by the way, never tell a real bartender that you went to bartending school. It's like, you know, you'd be shunned. I guess you're supposed to just wake up one day knowing how to make a Harvey Wallbanger. But but yeah, bartending wasn't for me. And what else? You know, I was a bellman for a while. That was kind of cool. I kind of enjoyed that gig. But yeah, I was doing these no resume jobs. And, you know, by some miracle, I ended up, you know, facing some fears, figuring out that I needed to learn business. And that led me to, you know, working for a marketing company. And that led me to the miracle of discovering this thing called, you know, direct response copywriting, and discovering people I could really relate to, like nonconformists, other unhirables like John Carlton, who's now a friend and mentor, Gary Halbert, you know, all the greats. And from then, that was it. I was hooked.
Wow. And I love the correlation, as you explain, because you're the first road comic, I guess you could call them, who did it, like, and made it work for years. But the correlation between that and, like, being in a band, which is where I come from.
Right.
And it's the same, like, you realize this point where you're right, there's only so much talent involved. The top music out there today, I think, is complete garbage and is not even written by those people, but that's a whole side rant for me that I won't get into. But the real music doesn't, that's not where it is. It's not about that. Talent is just that small part, and then it's so much else. But then you see that and you don't want to be, it's true, that like 50-year-old person still just slugging it out. And so you make a change. But it's also, it's cool because your work on the road, I mean, it's entrepreneurial. You're doing it yourself, right? It's your own business. You're out there trying to like get work and find work. And it's like freelancing, basically.
Yeah.
It's a great way to learn to swim in this whole industry.
Yeah, that's the truth. I only wish I'd have treated it like that. You know, I'd say it's funny. There's a couple crossroads in my career looking back. A lot of it's confidence issues. It's the same thing I help coach freelancers in now. But I remember a good friend of mine is a guy named Billy Gardell, who had a great career. He just wrapped up 6 seasons of a sitcom called Mike and Molly, with, you know, co-starring with Melissa McCarthy, who, wow, you know, became an amazingly huge movie star during the run of that show. And, you know, hey, that's like the coup de grace in Hollywood, you know, if you can have a successful run on anything. And he and I moved out to LA together when we started at the same age. He was from Orlando, I was from Tampa. And the biggest crossroads in our career was, I remember when he got a manager, he signed with a manager, and the manager told him, here's the deal. You will no longer take feature work. You're a headliner now. And I don't care how hungry you get, you say no to anything but headline work. And I remember for a few months, he would paint houses, do whatever he had to do to make his rent so he could say no to anything but a headlining gig. And before you knew it, 6 months later, he was a bona fide headliner in the clubs. And I was like, man, yeah, I'm not passing up, you know, $600 to go middle at the Funny Bone, you know, and sure enough, you know, years later, I was still middling at the Funny Bone. And he was, you know, because he made a commitment and he invested in himself. And I think when you do that, that's when, you know, I learned so many years later, the value you're putting on yourself to yourself, not just to other people, that really makes a difference.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I love that you relate it to confidence, right? And having this, because at the beginning you said your one thing is that you now take comedic chances, which obviously takes confidence and something that you kind of learn along the way. And now you help freelancers have that. So taking comedic chances is your one thing. Now, Kevin, every expert talks about the 80-20 rule in business. So you're supposed to do 20% and get 80% of the results. You're supposed to strictly do what you're good at. You're supposed to delegate the rest. Kevin, I would love it if you could tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business.
Oh, man. What a list. Anything technical, I'm sure you get this answer a lot, but that's, you know, certainly the thing for me that, you know, if it's something's breaking, I need to not be the one touching it, looking into it, noodling around, even in WordPress. You know, it's amazing how quickly you can screw up a website if you get into the, you know, the code. if I'm looking at code, man, this is red alert. You know what I mean? Bad news. What if I just remove that one little arrow thing there? That might, oh my God, it's a different site all of a sudden. So yeah, tech and, you know, customer support. I'll tell you, that's a big one because I have a lot of emotional attachment. Like I've learned to look, if my site goes down, you know, that's our nightmare, right? Because we live online and you go, what's worse? Well, if my site's down, pretty much the world stops. But I go, you know what? It's a technical thing and it can happen. And you sort of accept that that's a possibility. You do your best to secure against it. When it comes to customer support, it's another thing. I should not see anybody unhappy or having to wait to have an issue resolved because I literally, it's an open loop that I can't move on until it's closed. I have to get in there. I'll personally help them. And let's face it, you know, as business owners and, you know, leaders, people like shouldn't really get a response from you directly when they're just trying to figure out how to update their credit card, you know? But if I see that happening and there's no one else available to address it, I'm like, yeah, I have to take care of the people. So that's it. I'd say those are the two biggest things that I pay to have covered so that I don't have to think about.
Yeah. And you're right. It shouldn't be you. But at the same time, you're the one who's losing sleep over it. So, and that is what makes you an entrepreneur and a business person is that you care deeply about that situation. So the fact where you can't, until you close that loop, you can't move on.
Right. Yep.
All right. We're going to move to projects, Kevin. Projects is a really loose term. So whether it's a new program or something you want to develop within your business or a completely new sort of side business. But I know that the further we get into business, especially online, the more ideas that we come up with personally, like in the shower or whatever we happen to be doing, but also ideas and offers for projects come across our desk or through our inbox. Mm. I would like to know, Kevin, what your process is, whether it's internal or whether it's like a written process you have, but how do you decide that a new project is worth your time, energy, and resources?
Oh man, such a great question. And I was literally writing about this morning, all morning. I use a thing I call the spot filter. And it's an acronym. I'm hopelessly addicted to acronyms. They just like fall into place for me. And I go, I wish that didn't happen because I'm gonna look like such a geek using another acronym. But this is what I call a sure profit offer talk. And essentially it's the dialogue. You know, I always talk about the dialogue. The dialogue solves everything. That, like, you know, if you're having, so if you have a project and somebody says, hey, I got this great idea, or like you said, it happens all the time, comes to you in the shower, this brilliant thing, and like you can't rinse the soap off fast enough to run to GoDaddy and buy the domain. And
I've never done that before.
There should be like a morning after, you know, pill for domain purchases. But yeah, so then look, if you're having a dialogue, this is why it's an amazing time to be an entrepreneur and why you really should, you know, have a landing page and be building a list or at least be entrenched in a community of like-minded people who could, you know, potentially want to work with you or buy products or services from you. Because if you have some authority in those places, even if you don't have a website, even if it's just Facebook or whatever, and you're having a back and forth conversation regularly with people and hearing what they need, what they don't need, what they're interested in, then you can really vet a project idea quickly. You could be as blatant as going, hey, I woke up with this great idea. Feels right to me. I got to run it by you guys. What are you thinking? Basically take a casual survey, get really direct ideas, or you can, you know, have a conversation about it. Like this morning I wrote a, you know, whole long email about this very thing of, you know, and I looked up and I found a Forbes article where they say the exact same thing, you know, 90% of all new businesses fail. And this guy laid out the top five reasons. And his number one reason was they're not in deep dialogue with their prospects. And I was like, wow, perfect. Use that, back that up. And so, you know, the first way I start vetting project ideas is I do it internally. I start to research, are other people talking about this? Is this validated in some way? If so, if I get a green light there, then I want to have dialogue with the people I think would be interested in that ultimately we're talking about an offer here, right? I mean, unless it's a podcast, like a podcast is, yeah, that's a project. Cause you go, there might not be an immediate call to action. Hey, give me money and I'll give you this off of a podcast, but it's still an amazing way to grow an audience. That's a project that you want to vet, you know, but ultimately we're talking about a project. Either somebody comes to you or you have this idea and you want to find out, look, is this going to make money? Or is this, am I going down a rabbit hole that's going to eat up hours of my life, potentially cost me, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I'm going to find out, shit, nobody wanted this in the first place.
All right. So if it's something that you're going to sell, a new product offering, say, or service, or if it's a podcast, you're right. They both are something you're deciding to do, and they both just have a different metric of success, meaning that you're right. It doesn't directly correlate to more money a podcast, but it will have a different metric, whether that's audience or engagement or an email list. It doesn't matter. But We all kind of put these metrics of success into our mind, probably not on paper because we're entrepreneurs and we don't do those kind of things. But we have this idea of what success looks like to us. And so we go through this internal process. Yes, this is what I'm going to do. And so Kevin, you decide that this project is the thing you should do. You put all this time, energy, and resources into it. And you push it out, and after, say, 1 month or 3 months, whatever your metric calls for, You find that this is absolutely not working, right? And so as entrepreneurs, I mean, as human beings just in general, we have this, one of our greatest struggles, I find, is that fear of being wrong, making a mistake and it having it totally fail in front of us. So when that happens, you still have to continue on in business. Mm-hmm. You still have to get up and have that confidence that you talked about. Kevin, could you tell me how in business, can you tell me how to be wrong?
Well, that's a good question. I want to make sure I understand the question. Do you mean how to be wrong the right way?
How to be wrong and not have it completely sideswipe you for the next 2 months. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. One quick answer on like how to avoid being wrong the wrong way is never answer an email when you're pissed.
Whoa, if I had a nickel every time I thought of that beforehand.
Oh man, right? Yeah, that's my another rule I put in place for myself. It's like if I feel any tingling anger going through my veins, I walk away, you know? It's amazing how, you ever do that? Like actually have the sense not to hit send, come back and look at the draft the next morning and go, what was I saying? I didn't even read the response correctly. I almost like flipped out on this person and I like missed a word.
Just, I don't want to interrupt you, but sometimes I use Gmail all the time, but I literally have written responses. This happens way too often. Responses to an email, like in anger, and I'll click send, but then up top you get about a 5 to 10 second window to undo the send. Are you sure you want to send this? And I'll just watch that and kind of push it as far as I can and then undo. And sometimes I miss it. It's like, oh, well, but it feels so good.
Yeah, it's really, who needs drama, right? It's like, just let it go.
Exactly. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay, so I gave a great example of how to be wrong. It happened to me just recently. So I had this idea to maybe do a mastermind, a small group mastermind. And so I sent out an email, you know, a couple weeks before February. And I said, hey, thinking of doing I'm planning a small group mastermind for February. Are you interested? Very Dean Jackson style email, if you know about Dean. And I got back over 100 yeses. Yes, tell me more. That'd be awesome. And I went, whoa, this is, look at this. This is great. Oh, now I have to do it, right? 100 people just said they'd love to. And so I got excited. And I'll tell you, 3 of the yeses that I got were from people who run their own masterminds, who people I consider mentors, right? And I'm going, wow, okay, this is great. They want to come. I'll have like this pro panel. I'll host it. Maybe those people will present for like 20 minutes. So they'll be able to scrape new information and then we'll do hot seats. So these business owners are going to have their minds blown. They're going to leave with so much value. And that was all true. I spoke to all 3 of those mentors and they were all like, yeah, man, let's do it. This sounds great. We're coming. One guy even bought a plane ticket right away. And so now I'm like, well, this has to happen. So then I went down to the hotel. You'll love this, John. The very same hotel that I was a bellman at when we moved here. Like, what beautiful irony, right? I could already hear the opening, you know, speech I'll give. And so booked a room, got a good room block. Everything's perfect. And then I responded a little late. Should have been like a next day response. Okay, here's what's happening. Let's talk. You know, by now, you know, there's a weekend in there. So it's been like 5 or 6 days. This, you know, initial excitement's totally gone cold. And I'm making the offer and like nobody's responding. A few people are like, you know, people are responding, but they're not like, all right, I'll be there. They're like, ah, oh, man, you know, it sounds amazing, but, you know, it's too soon. Or I've already got travel that weekend or whatever. And I quickly realize, all right, here's what's happening. I could either spend the next 4 weeks, you know, really having to hustle to get people in the seats. And I've got these people I respect a lot flying in, and it could really end up being compromised as far as having the right people in there that can get the full impact and the value. And I stepped back and I went, all right, what's really happening here? How much of this only lives in my mind and how much of it am I actually committed to? And the reality was the only sacrifice there was to make was that a good friend of mine bought a plane ticket that he suddenly had no use for, which I felt bad about. But at the same time, I knew he would understand I was doing the right thing. So I stepped back and I called it off, you know, and it felt great because if I looked at it that way, I go, the only way I could have screwed this up was to really force it and have it be compromised. Yes, I may have been able to, you know, fill all the seats and everybody would have had an amazing time and it went well. Could it possibly have gone as well as if I take a step back and plan it 2 or 3 months out, which is the amount of time these things need to develop and be, you know, fulfilled correctly? No, probably not. So even though I could have pulled it off, I decided no risk on compromising value and I backed it off. My friend was perfectly fine with having, you know, a credit with JetBlue and everybody went home happy, you know? That's, I guess, one time I feel like I was wrong and I did it the right way.
Yeah, I love it. There was something that caught my attention there, though, from a direct response, from that perspective of mm-hmm. direct response, but also from logistical. You mm-hmm. said that you sent out this email blast, you had way more excitement and anticipation than you expected. Then you went to that hotel, but then you waited too long. And you mm-hmm. said you should have emailed them the next day, but that's where logistics obviously comes into the issue where, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to sell them without exactly. knowing for sure? But from a direct response, I think you were thinking that it would have been better and you waited too long. So why, or would you do it differently next time? Would you just take that leap and screw logistics? Because from a direct response, I know when they're warm right now on this, that I should just make up an offer and offer it. You know what I mean? Like if you had to live this all over again, knowing what we know now, a month later, would you do it differently? And would you take that direct response action the next day?
Yeah, absolutely. So 2 things. One is I sort of did. What I did was I actually took a cue. And again, this is why the dialogue is so critical, right? A lot of the dialogue I heard back was, is this live or virtual? And some people would even hint that February would be tough for me, but if we're talking virtual, I'm in, right? So I also knew I could definitely take this momentum and create a virtual offer and do well and still serve people on a high level. What I would do differently is I think I would still do the really simple, hey, are you interested, just to get people to raise their hand and pay attention. But I would have the logistics worked out first, right?
Smart.
So let's say I do this in April instead. Yeah, I'll just, you know, the first email is kind of pretending that it's just a thought and let people go, yeah, tell me more. What do you got in mind? That's, you know, I don't think there's anything unethical about that, right? But like you said, it just solves the problem of me having to scramble around like a nut, like I did the first time.
Exactly. Exactly. Beautifully said. All right, Kevin, this has been a blast. I want to wrap up with one final question. A final question that's going to be interesting to hear your answer because of where you've come from. As you said, when you moved where you are in Florida, that you were a bellhop at that hotel that you were now looking at putting on live events for. That's awesome. It shows that you've come a long ways. But we deal with this entrepreneurial gap sometimes, which comes from Dan Sullivan, this idea. But I really love this question. This idea of us being entrepreneurs and dreamers, we're always projecting our success into the future. And like the horizon, as you walk towards it, it always gets further away. And our success is always in 1 month when you do this revenue target. In 6 months, when you get to have your virtual summit, that's when you'll see yourself as a success. Except right before you get there, you set bigger, loftier goals into the future. And we oftentimes end up in this gap where we, no matter what we accomplish, we never see ourselves as successful. You've come a long ways, Kevin, from stand-up comedy through stand-up comedy to where you are now. I would love for you to look back from today behind you and at the wins, the losses, the highs, the lows, and tell me how you feel about your entrepreneurial journey up until today.
Well, first of all, I feel like great that I'm not the only one who feels that way. So thank you. That was like a little therapy session just in one question there. Yeah. So looking back, I feel tremendous. I'll tell you, you know, look, freelancing's a funny thing. There's a real paradox in being a great freelancer. And that is, in order to perform at a high level, you have to care a little too much. And it can be a real problem and a hindrance, and it can bring a lot of stress into your life because, and most freelancers I know worry more than their client about the project. But without that, I don't think you'll care enough to become great and go the extra mile and do good work and build a reputation and truly become an expert that gets paid what they're worth. So that's a funky thing. What makes me proud, John, as I look back, is that, and this is at the hand of mentors. Mentors have been everything to me, but I have been careful to, you know, start things and follow through with them in a way that, like, I was blogging when I had no reason to be blogging. Something told me, you know, share what you know, just put it out there. And the first time I ever made an offer to my 300 person blog subscriber list, I ended up, you know, beating out legends, mega gurus for the offer, because it was so perfect for the few people who were paying attention to me. And that was a real eye opener. And so rather than treat that as a fluke or say, well, this is cool, that's like a little side income, I thought, well, what if this was a 3,000 person list? And what if I could not only promote offers, but create offers? And so I always took the next step, but I did it without abandoning the thing that got me there. I think the smartest thing I did as a freelancer was I never stopped calling myself a copywriter, and I never stopped saying people should contact me about it. Because, you know, if I can hand off the lead to somebody I know would be a great fit for that person, that's a service I should be providing to both parties. And, you know, a mistake I've seen a lot of people make, especially freelancers, is they get excited, they go to a conference or they join a mastermind and they go, I'm not a freelancer anymore. That's kid stuff. I'm a product creator now. I'm a guru now. And all of a sudden, you quickly realize that caring too much really prevents you from moving quickly. And there's a separate gene that, like, true salespeople, like true marketers have, that freelancers don't quite share. And it doesn't always work out You can't flip it like a switch. It takes, it's a progressive evolution that I have found. And so I guess if I look back, the thing I can be the most proud of is that I've made incremental steps towards what I really wanted and, you know, made sure I was moving along, not always as quickly as I like, but never abandoned my vision for what this business could be like.
I love it. I love it. I love the caring too much keeps you from moving quickly. And I love the idea of at the hand of mentors. That's awesome.
Thanks, man.
Kevin, this has been an absolute blast. We've got to talk about your business in passing, but I would love it right now if you would specifically tell the listener where they can find out more about you and your business.
Yeah, thanks, John. It's just copychief.com. That's where you want to be. A copy chief in our world of direct response is somebody who oversees the copywriting of a great sales campaign. That's what I do in my business. I love working with people to, you know, get really excited about their offers and working with copywriters to get the best work they can create. And I have a whole community now called Copy Chief. And the idea there is that, you know, our slogan is nobody writes alone. And, you know, copywriting can seem really difficult. I pride myself on breaking it down and making it super simple for people. I take like joke formulas from my stand-up days and turn them into sales hook formulas and let people have fun basically doing Mad Libs and going, holy smokes, I think I just wrote copy. And then, you know, I get, you know, putting it up and having it actually convert, right? So that's what we do at Copy Chief. It's really cool. We got a blog. I got a podcast, The Truth About Marketing. Privileged to have you as a recent guest, John. And yeah, these are the things I love and I hope people enjoy them.
Awesome. The Truth About Marketing podcast and copychief.com. I will link to both of those in the show notes. I strongly suggest you go into copychief.com, waiting for that nice pop-up to appear and putting your email in there. Kevin is somebody you should learn email marketing from, and I strongly suggest you doing that. But Kevin, again, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. I really, really, truly do appreciate it. And please just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thank you, brother. I had a blast. Thanks, man.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I had an absolute blast on that conversation. And I hope you out there listening enjoyed it as much as I did. And I've mentioned this a few times that it happens. And Kevin's one of those people. I don't know if you can tell. It'd be interesting to know if you can tell listening. But I can tell sometimes when I have a conversation with somebody who I don't really know at. Well, I don't. I didn't know Kevin in any way. But I mean, I did the bit of research that I do on him. And then we had this conversation. And it was like we were friends. It was like we'd known each other, even though we don't know anything about each other. And we had never heard of each other really before. It's, you kind of make that spark. It's there. And it's really, I don't know. I'd be interested to know if you, let me know, drop me an email or hit me on Twitter or something. But let me know, like, can you tell the conversations like that? Because I really can. And I like to think that it changes the conversation that we're more, it's like we're friends sitting down for a coffee or something, but I'm not sure. But anyways, it was a really, really great conversation. I've got to talk to Kevin via email some more, and I'm hoping to maybe get to meet up with him in New York at a small little mastermind conference next month, but we'll see. So it was interesting, and I relate a lot to the whole punk rock and the whole stand-up comedian trying to make a living and me traveling in a van with a band getting started. It resonates well. It's a cool, I don't know. I like the idea of, I mean, I love the idea of people just going out there and doing what they feel they're meant to do. And what's the worst that can happen, right? I love that attitude. And it's kind of how I've tried to do it. So I guess I resonate well with people who are also doing that. But to the point of this conversation, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things Kevin said that I had to go back and listen to. And so I did. And I went right back to the very beginning because there was some things there, but they weren't quite the things I was looking for. And then we got almost actually to the end of this conversation. And there was this one thing that Kevin said to me. And it just really, really, really stuck in my head. There was this one thing that he said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Like I was blogging when I had no reason to be blogging. Something told me, you know, share what you know, just put it out there. And the first time I ever made an offer to my 300 person blog subscriber list, I ended up, you know, beating out legends, mega gurus for the offer, because it was so perfect for the few people who were paying attention to me. And that was a real eye opener.
And that's the hack. Kevin, Kevin, Kevin. Now this, I love. This is a real eye opener for you, Kevin. And this was a real eye opener for me at one point. And this needs to be a real eye opener for you listening. We hear all these talks about everyone with their email lists of tens of thousands of people, their businesses or their websites with hundreds of thousands of visitors a month. Yeah, that's great. That's fine. That's dandy. Who cares? It's the people that you make that really good connection with. And you do not need thousands and thousands and thousands. If you had 1,000 people, or what I call 1,000 maniacs, they would be exactly enough to completely transform your life. It's really that simple. And so this idea of having 300, having a really good relationship with them, and putting the right offer in front of them and blowing away people with massive email lists, yes, this completely changes your mindset about business, but this isn't groundbreaking. Once you've done it and you've heard this, but I want to bring this home to you because you need to understand this. Stop looking at people with these massive platforms and think that that's what's necessary. It's like, of course, once you build a small platform of 300 people and you can convert really well and sell really well to them, you're going to want to grow that platform, and you will with exactly the same tactics that got you to 300. But it's, you don't have to wait until you have 30,000 people before you can make an offer. And you also don't have to wait until you have 3,000 people to make really good money and a real business around this. And so I love this. So from my book, I then went into a pilot launch, which I didn't even mention on the show because I just wanted not that many people into it, but I've created a course and it's not open yet, but it should be open around the end of March. But it's called 1000 Maniacs. And it's this exact process of creating content that will help you find and will nourish and take subscribers, turn them into maniacs or true fans, and then create a tiny product around it, and then launch that tiny product to them. And then continue this cycle until you find your first 1000 maniacs and make your first $1,000 on the internet. If you go to hacktheentrepreneur.com/1000maniacs, you'll see the page. You can sign up right now and get onto the notification list, and you'll be first to know about it when it opens if you wish. That was just a tie into this point of Kevin's, and it was kind of not planned, but it's an amazing transformative mindset shift that you need to go through. And I thank you, Kevin, for bringing this up, because those 300 people, if they're nourished and if they truly do become your maniacs, it will transform your business, and therefore it will transform your life. It really, really is that simple. It's not easy, but it is that simple. Thank you so much, Kevin. All right, hacktheentrepreneur.com. Go there now, please. Get on to the email list. I would love to have you there, and I would love to send you some good stuff. Plus, my best work goes out every Sunday, and I would love to be able to send it to your inbox. Also, when you're at the site, you can check out 1000 Maniacs if you'd like. There's a landing page up there, and you can put your email in to get just onto that notification list. Those people don't get my newsletter. It's a separate list because I don't want to bombard those people, but you will know about the course when it comes out. So check it out if you would like. But get on the email list, and yeah, I'll be climbing into your inbox every Sunday, morning or afternoon, depending on when I get around to it. I literally write it and send it, but it is my best work, and that gives you direct access to my inbox, and you can hit reply to any email. Ask me any questions you want. Tell me where you are. Or the best thing that I really love is when you take a picture of where you're listening to this show right now and email it to me. That blows my mind. The pictures I get from all over the place. And it's cool. I love seeing it. Especially warm places, because I'm up in Canada right now, and it's not warm. So I would love to see some pictures of warmer places than I'm in. Excellent. Well, it's been fun. I thank you so much. I don't want to take any more of your time. I do appreciate you stopping by. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.